Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. You know what I've been thinking about?
What?
I have been thinking about how incredible our art scene is here in Northwest Ohio.
Every single day.
Every single day I think about it. Because obviously, if you listen to the pod regularly, you know I'm a major theater kid. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's not the only type of art we have here. We have an award-winning museum. We have an incredible arts high school.
Yes.
We have great arts programs through colleges. And we even have a really robust arts commission here that works with public art installations, public programming. They're really incredible. And no one is better to talk about the Arts Commission and their mission, as well as how amazing our arts community is, than Natalie Gray, our guest on today's podcast. What's up, Natalie?
Hi, Natalie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's it going?
Here.
I'm really happy to be on the come up.
Yeah, girl. We're all on the come up. So let's talk really quick about your background. Give us some information about, you know, your growing up life, kind of anything pre-college. What's the vibe of Natalie's childhood?
The vibe of my childhood? Sure. I am from Toledo. And, you know, my dad's a drummer. So I feel like I pretty much got into the art scene immediately because I was going to shows. My mom's a quilter. So they really raised us with, like, an appreciation for the arts and how they can bring people together.
So true. And then talk a little bit then. You went to UT?
Yes. UT, you know?
UT, hashtag, when I was there, it was hashtag YUT.
Hashtag YUT.
Okay, so like YUT.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, real. Okay, well, I am really proud to say that I'm a Toledo Excel scholar. So
ooh,
I was
cool.
In the Toledo Excel program. For people who don't know, it's almost 4 decades old now. And it's a program that gives basically full ride scholarships to local area, low income and minority youth. So people who wouldn't otherwise maybe be able to get to go to college. I was able to go to college and I didn't even have to pay for a book.
That is amazing.
So for anyone awesome. Who wants a full ride to college, if you have a 7th or 8th grader, they need to start when they're in middle school and they are in this program for all of high school. And then they, if they complete it, can go to University of Toledo.
That's really cool.
Thank you, Dr. Cook. Andrew Cooks, yeah.
We love a little shout out.
Yeah. So what was your major when you were there?
I was actually a communications major.
Okay.
It's the closest thing you can be to being undeclared while still declaring. And so it's nice to be in a podcast studio because I was a part of the radio station at the university and I really wanted to help spread the word about everything that I knew about in Toledo that I felt like was underrated. So
yeah.
Kind of just wanted to do everything. And communications was a fun way to try everything.
And when you were in school, did you kind of keep that love of the arts going throughout your college experience?
Oh, yeah. Because I went to Toledo School for the Arts. It's a free 6 through 12 art school.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to practice a lot of art and dance and poetry and photography and theater. And I realized, you know, what I'm good at, what I'm bad at, what my strengths are. And I think that was really important to me. So I stayed involved with arts through college. I did a lot of volunteering for the Arts Commission. I worked for Toledo School for the Arts. And I just try to support the arts that are in Toledo.
Yeah.
I was booking shows when I was underage. I couldn't go to bars, but I'd book shows at bars.
I love that.
Yeah, I kind of forget about that until someone asks me about those years, but yeah, it was fun.
I feel like a lot of young performers can relate to you there of like not even being able to legally drink, but doing a show at a bar.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Toledo is like a very DIY place. So if you can just ask someone, hey, can I do this event here? And they say, yes, you can do it. It's a lot easier, I think, than larger markets. So it was kind of fun to be young and in the art scene here because you could just do whatever if you could get someone to agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And so obviously you went to TSA before you went to UT. But while you were at UT, you did some work with TSA also, right? So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I worked for Dave Gerke at Toledo School for the Arts in development. So I was able to fundraise and help, you know, promote the cause that I really believed in.
That's awesome. I love that. And what kind of inspired you to be a part of that team with TSA?
Sure. Well, I always volunteered when I was at the school, and I would give tours to prospective students and donors and really would talk about how important it was. I was able to get an arts education for free. My family would have never been able to pay for me to train in dance for 3 hours a day. And they shouldn't have because I was really bad, but that's not the point. The point is you should be able to, you know, learn about other cultures and learn about who you are and what your strengths are and like you know, theater is the ultimate professional development for me. So I was really grateful to have access to all those arts. A lot of schools don't even have art at all. So I really was all about spreading the word. And I still am. TSA is open. You guys can go anytime. Go to the gallery. It's an awesome place. It's cool.
I was about to say, I think we've definitely seen each other at the gallery there before. It's a really cool place for not just the students, but also for the public as well to be involved.
So after college, you kind of moved to the Arts Commission.
Sure.
And started with the creative placemaking team. Can you explain a little bit in your own words what creative placemaking is and why it's important?
Sure. Creative placemaking was a movement in creative nonprofits to use the arts to activate spaces, to promote like activating blighted buildings, covering up blight, and bringing people together, using the arts to address social issues in neighborhoods, bringing neighbors together to talk about what their problems were, and also just beautifying the space. And art is a good way to talk about things that are hard instead of just like, oh, we're going to have a community forum. So if you could use art, it's kind of like, I kind of say like putting the medicine in the peanut butter a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like we can talk about hard things, but arts makes it easier to swallow. Poetry,
sure.
Songs, theater, all that stuff. So in my time, it was like place-based art stuff. So we would, you know, work with young kids and try to activate theaters that were kind of going under and just try to help places in Toledo that needed some TLC with art.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
And do you have a particular experience when you were on that team that really resonates with you, or something that you feel like really led to the next step in your career with the Arts Commission?
Well, I really believe that the arts are one of the coolest things Toledo has. And so it was really awesome that I was able to work at an organization that I, you know, when I was a kid, I would volunteer for them because I, you know, I was a kid, what else are you supposed to do? You party, you know, you can't go out to bars or anything. So I would just volunteer for the Arts Commission, and it was so fun. And so to me, it was one, really exciting to be a part of that. And two, going to places that I had never really been before, like the Ohio Theater, which has now luckily been adopted and been taken care of and totally redone by a Children's Theater Workshop. Mm-hmm. But at the time was just kind of a struggling theater with a small board and an AmeriCorps member that was running the whole thing.
Yeah.
So one of my most fond memories of working in the LaGrange neighborhood was working at being a volunteer at the concession stand at the theater for an amateur wrestling event. And then I got really into amateur professional wrestling.
Whoa, cool.
Because I was volunteering for a historic theater. Something you wouldn't normally think about, but you asked.
It works,
you
it
asked.
Works.
So that's one of my favorite memories.
I love it. And how do you feel like doing your work with the creative placemaking team kind of led to furthering your career and your position within the Arts Commission?
Well, I was volunteering a lot, and I was able to connect artists to community, community to resources through creative placemaking, and then I was able to move into youth services.
Mm-hmm.
What I really wanted to help Toledo, and I wanted to use the arts to do that, but only like 6 people worked at the Arts Commission, and they had all worked there for 10 years, so I thought, well, it's never going to happen. But the staff and budget tripled in 10 years. So by the time I graduated college, I could work there.
Wow.
And my predecessor just happened to move on, and I was really looking forward to working with her, and someone said, are you going to apply for that? I was like, youth services? I am a youth still, you know? And I'm lucky that someone suggested that, that they thought I could do it, because I did. And so I'm excited. Now I get to work with young artists that are like the next generation of artists in Toledo. And that's like the most fulfilling thing in the world.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really good testament to sometimes you can't really see the forest through the trees, but other people can give you a little push in the right direction and can greatly impact how you change your life.
Absolutely. The art school and arts didn't make me like a great artist, but it really made me an advocate for young people to having access to it, because it was really important, informative for me.
Yeah, which is absolutely. So awesome. And kind of moving into that position with youth services and then now being the director of youth services with the Arts Commission, did you find any particular challenges I had to face with taking on more responsibility?
Of course. I mean, one, I have to manage people and hire people. So there's an HR element. And they're 14 to 18 year olds. So that comes with its own problems. Although they are young people, they have adult problems. So we have 14 to 18 year olds that come from all over Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. And it's really good because it's a class clash. You know, we work with a lot of low to moderate income households. And we also have kids that pull up in BMWs. You know, so it's really good for them to like meet each other and for it to occur to them that, oh, so-and-so doesn't have art supplies at home, or so-and-so has been to France, you know, that's maybe the first time they're confronted with that kind of thing. So there's challenges in that already. And then, of course, the pandemic obviously disrupted a child's development. So all the kids we're working with now are kind of supplementing their socialization that they maybe didn't get when they were, whatever, sheltering in place. So
yeah.
That's challenging, but it's awesome. They get to come and express themselves and be themselves and make friends and make memories and make money. They get paid to work at Young Artists at Work. So we're starting to have second generation apprentices whose parents were in the program.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's
yes,
really
there
cool.
are challenges always. And they're always different and surprising, but it's always worth it.
Yeah.
Well, and similarly on the other side of that are the flowers that come from those programs, right? So you just wrapped up the 2025 Young Artists at Work program. So talk a little bit about the program in general, but then also how this year's comfortably known YAW went.
Yes, Young Artists at Work, also known as YAW, is a six-week paid summer employment opportunity for teens where they get paid to make art. And like I said, they make memories and they make friends. They make art for the community. They work with a client and they have to design and execute a project within the 6 weeks. And they also make artwork to sell, which they did. So it was a great summer. We hired 46 14, 18-year-olds and they made a mural at Compassion Health. They made a mural at Manahan, which is a facility for adults with developmental disabilities. And they're also doing an interactive installation that you all can interact with in September at Artomatic. That's our next event that the Arts Commission is doing September 19th, 20th, and 21st.
So what do you feel like made this particular year's program different from other years? Or what did you see maybe when you're talking about that socialization of the kids who kind of were stunted from COVID development? What did you see this year that might have differed?
The best things that happen in the Young Artists at Work program are things that have come from the artists that have gone through the program before. So when a young leader comes back and says, I want to do this, I want to be the marketing intern, then our marketing is better than ever. When they come back and say, you know what we should do? We should activate this gallery. Okay, you have to learn how to frame and you have to learn how to hang a show. It's the best thing ever. So nothing that I come up with is like brilliant. I am really proud of one field trip though. We went downtown to all these different galleries and studios that none of the young artists had seen before. So we went to Graphite Design and Build and Huron Street Studios and Stu's House, and they had never been there before. And at the end of the summer, they said, you know, Natalie, we were talking and some artists and I, we want to get a studio together downtown, like when we graduate. And they kind of had that idea because they saw some other young artists doing that too. So I was like, yes, it's working.
I love that.
We also had a zoo teen who was really familiar with the Prometica Natural History Museum, but didn't know that all of the sculptures of all the animals and paintings in there were done by local artists. They thought everything had been shipped in from the coasts. And
oh, wow.
I said, no, it was made right here. And they're like, I worked in that all summer last summer, and no one told me that. And I want to work here one day, and I want to do what they're doing. And we were walking back. It was a long, hot day. Everyone complained about walking all day. And I didn't know if it was a success or not. And then an apprentice said to me, you know, Natalie, the main thing I learned from y'all is to stay in Toledo.
Wow.
And that was like, all right, that was worth it.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're not only fostering such great growth for these young people, but you're also showcasing how beautiful our community is, which is just, I mean, you can't beat that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of art between the Mudhen Stadium and the hockey arena
yeah.
that they don't even know about.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know, like, I'm with Imagination Station, and I really like being able to work, like, hands-on with them. And, you know, while they're still so, like, young and impressionable and seeing the gears kind of turning. So I'm curious, too, like, from your perspective, why you think it's so important to work with the youth, which I know you already touched on.
Sure.
But
absolutely. Apprentices get paid to be creative. Art is work. It is a job. The arts and the creative economy in Northwest Ohio produces more than the glass and auto industry combined. So people really don't think about the arts as economic drivers, but it is, and they should be paid for their work. Painting a mural and making art is hard work, and it should be valued. So one, introducing to young people that their job can be something they like and their opinions could matter, you know, can change their whole relationship to work for the rest of their working career, first of all. But two, just having a job in the summer, we already know the impacts of like having somewhere to go, feeling like you belong somewhere, feeling like you're a part of a team. And obviously economically, you know, when people have jobs, crime goes down, et cetera. So, I mean, there's like some very tangible reasons why. And then there's like the magical reasons why, which is that you get to see what they make and they get to like build the confidence in themselves. The product of Young Artists at Work is not the murals or the artwork they sell. The product is confident young leaders.
And so obviously you do a lot with the Arts Commission and a lot with the youth in our area, but outside of the Arts Commission, you're also very involved in our community and you specifically really love creative nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about your focus and your love for creative nonprofits and kind of what inspired you to delve into that space?
Sure. My experience volunteering with things like Toledo Soup and the Ohio Theater led me to volunteer for Toledo Streets newspaper and Issue Box Theater, of course. And I also dance with AHA Dance. So I'm still kind of involved in the arts, but kind of helping in my own way.
Oh, and now all of our listeners can see if you really are the bad dancer that you claim to be.
Yeah, you will. I don't know when this comes out, but you can see me dance poorly soon.
Well, and so you did just kind of touch on it, but we did want to talk about your work with Toledo Streets.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about your passion with that particular publication.
Sure. Toledo Streets Newspaper is an awesome organization that helps people who probably otherwise couldn't get jobs because they don't have IDs or they have criminal records make money, and also connects them to other services that they need. If they need housing, if they need food, it's a place where people can go and people are happy to see them, first of all. So if you see anyone downtown wearing a vest selling newspapers, it's Toledo Street. They approached me about doing an arts issue, similarly to how you guys asked me to be here today, and thank you. And then I just stayed on the editorial committee. So every month we meet and talk about whatever the theme is and who we can get to write issues or write articles and who we want to contribute to the article or who we want to spotlight and feature.
Yeah, well, and I think for me, I've always been a huge fan of Toledo Streets because it combines, one, my love of journalism with, two, my love of helping people. And so I think it's really cool to see that they're being able to, you know, help the greater community with a lot of cool information and new things that you might not know that's going on in the community. But then also, like you said, it gives so much opportunity for people who do not have it otherwise. And it's just really, really cool to see. I think it's really awesome to see that you're a part of it. And I also want to talk about, you mentioned earlier, Issue Box Theater, where we both sit on the board for Issue Box Theater. And that's how we initially met. But tell me a little bit about how you got involved with them. And so far, I mean, there's been a lot to talk about, but what has been your most rewarding experience being a part of Issue Box?
Okay, Issue Box Theater is an organization that uses, again, the arts to address social justice issues with dignity. So that could be theater. It's telling stories, for example, working with people with dementia to tell their stories, just elevating underrepresented voices and producing shows that are about things that are hard to talk about, like, you know, what the Constitution means to me, or Willard Suitcases. So that's Issue Box Theater. How I got involved with it was that Rosie Best was my theater teacher when I was in high school, and I was supporting, you know, this organization, inviting them to work with Young Artists at Work and going to their shows. And then eventually they said, would you join the board? And I said, of course. One of my favorite memories of Issue Box Theater is the Willard Suitcases. I was able to work with the photographer John Crispin. So basically, Willard was an asylum in New York that was shut down. A lot of state asylums were shut down, and they found 427 suitcases left over from basically the 1890s to 1963. And nobody came to claim any of them. No descendants claimed any of them. These are suitcases of people who were institutionalized, who thought maybe one day they'd be able to leave the institution, and they evidently never did.
That's so chilling.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, so John Crispin, this photographer, he photographed all of the suitcases and their contents, and you can kind of tell a little bit about the people based on what was in the suitcase. So another artist saw his photos and wrote songs, fictional songs, about what she thought the characters or the people would be like based on what was in their suitcases. And that those songs became the Willard Suitcases, and then Issue Box Theater produced that. And I think so many people talk to me, obviously I work with the arts, mental health is a major issue right now. I mean, always has been, but like it's getting finally, the mental health is finally getting destigmatized. So it's coming up a lot more, and I can always point to this awesome production that they did. It was like, we were able to get people together to have a nice night, but also think about the forgotten stories of people who were institutionalized using the arts. I mean, that was sort of like, that's something that just keeps coming up. It was so relevant then, it's still relevant now. And I'm really proud that Issue Box did Willard Suitcases.
Yeah. And also just being able to tell their stories in a way that isn't so just like sad and awful, which it obviously is, but being able to appreciate the art, that's really amazing.
Yeah, and it's not scary, and it's like, how can we actually help people and rehabilitate people and not just send them away or medicate them to oblivion? You know, it challenges people to think about, okay, that's what we did for the last 100 years, what are we going to do for the next 100 years?
And I feel like that's a theme in a lot of the work that you do, is challenging people to think about things that they might not think about. And what's really unique is that arts has always been, but is now being a lot more appreciated as an avenue to tell some of those stories and relate to those audiences in a way that they might not be able to through reading an academic piece or, you know, even looking at another medium, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's really amazing that, one, you got to be involved, and two, that you continue to be involved with Issue Box Theater. And you're also the fundraising chair for Issue Box Theater, so that's combining another one of your big interests with the arts and with the mission of mental health, which is really cool.
It's always giving season.
Always giving season. Love that.
And kind of in that same light, looking towards the future, if you were to ever start your own creative nonprofit, what do you think it would be about? What interests are you combining?
What I like about Issue Box Theater is that they are doing something no one else is doing. I think I would want to promote dance or something like that, because people don't dance enough. And I think everyone would be healthier and happier if they did. And there's a weird stigma against around that. So I think something to kind of like people take things less seriously, or maybe helping people, or maybe young people, like learn how to communicate better through theater or something like that. I don't know, but maybe that already exists. That's a great question, Libby.
I think obviously I love dance and I totally agree with you. I think that it could be destigmatized. I think you should maybe pursue that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious.
I'm joining. What are you guys doing Saturday?
Yeah, no, right? Like, are we all going to hang out after this or what? So obviously Toledo is home to a lot of other nonprofits as well. Do you have a favorite nonprofit that you're not a part of? And if so, why is it your favorite?
Sophia Quintero Arts and Cultural Center does so many things, and I just feel like they can never get too much support, and they just do everything. I mean, they have a garden that's actually a farm. I don't know why they call it a garden. They're making so much stuff. They're having cooking classes. They're having dance lessons and a gallery and, you know, clay, like pottery. They do so much there. I think they're going to start doing furniture building. If you need anything ordered, like invitations, cards, stickers, magnets, whatever you need, they'll make it. I mean, they do so much. And so I just don't think we can shout them out enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely so fair. They're amazing.
So as such a strong advocate for the arts and arts access in Toledo, how do you think that people who may not be as connected with the art scene could help support that mission in their kind of day to day?
Everything the Arts Commission does is free for the community, so you can always come check out that, unless it's a fundraiser to support the free stuff we do. Come check out one of those things, like Artomatic in September or the Poetry Art Loop in October. But I think, you know, for me, one of my resolutions was to go see more live comedy, because during COVID-19, we couldn't go see those things. And I wondered if I'd be able to in the future. So I made it a point to go see more comedy. So maybe just setting a goal like that, if you've never been to an opera or a play or something in Toledo, it's pretty accessible to be able to go to those things. And if you can't go, you can ask and someone will definitely hook you up and help you go, because they want you to see it too. So I think just trying to actively, consciously try to do something you've never done before, because there's so much more than you think. Even Toledo School for the Arts, it's weird when people think it's kid art, but really those shows are great and they're really impressive and they're really affordable to go to. So like seeing a dance performance or something like that, or even just writing a poem, no one has to know about it.
So real. Contributing in your own individual way. We
love
that.
Secret support.
Yeah, not all support needs to be loud. I love that. You know, Natalie, you've given a lot of really great advice, I think, throughout this podcast. But I'm curious if you have one piece of advice that you would give to either young professionals or just to the community at large.
I guess something that's front of mind, because I do work with teenagers, is put your phone away during dinner. To be present with someone is the ultimate gift, and to be on your telephone is like, I don't know. Is that like, do I sound like really old and evil or
no,
something?
No, I think that's a really good piece of advice. People are not present enough.
Yeah, it's like no one needs to know where we were here ever. You know, it's like we know we were here because we're here right now. And mm-hmm. so we don't need to post about it. And so I don't know.
No, I think that's.
Feel free to cut
great
that.
Great. I mean, it's great to be connected, like, with social media and things like that, but actually being present is super important, so.
Yeah, I think there's a time and place for all of it, and I think you're definitely right, and especially a good way to be present is to be present in the moment with the arts by watching
a show. Actually, that's part of the reason why I like going to theater. It's because I have to put my phone away.
Right. It's a built-in excuse to put down your phone. Or if you're working with clay sculpting or painting your hands, like you're immediately putting down your phone.
Yeah.
So I feel like that advice goes hand in hand with your life mission.
And, you know, of course I'm saying that because I have a trouble putting it down. I'm not saying that I'm perfect and that everyone's on their phone too much. I'm clearly on the internet.
No, it's very true. And you didn't think we would leave without doing a Roman Empire.
Can't leave without the Roman Empire.
We cannot. And today, I think I'm going to do a surprise kickoff with our guest. So, Natalie, why don't you start us off with your Roman Empire?
My Roman Empire, the thing I think I can't stop thinking about?
Yes.
The city pools.
The city pools.
I always constantly have a towel and swimsuit on me just in case I get invited to a pool, which, hey, anybody out there listening, invite me to your pool.
That's so real.
Your lake has your pontoon boat. I'm there. And I think about it all the time. And, you know, on the way here, I drove by my city pool, which recently reopened this season. And I was like, oh, man, like, I love swimming so much. It's hot out. And I know, like, down to the minute when they're open and I just can't. I always want to be swimming. I always want to be swimming. And
like,
so,
are we playing mermaids? Or
no,
like,
I know.
Yeah, I'm cooking myself in the sun, getting in the water. I feel like I have a secret life nobody knows about because I'm always there. And the lifeguards and I, like, we have a years long rapport.
Wow. I love that. That's your cheers, where everybody knows your
name. That is so true.
The
yes.
City pools.
The city pools. And people don't always utilize them. Perhaps you guys all just have access to private pools and I don't, but it's worth it. And it's awesome.
Libby, what about you? What's your Roman Empire?
Okay, I want to talk about this voice actor, Tawny Plattis. She recently made a video on TikTok. It's called, like, she titled it 100 Years of Women Using the Baby Voice in Movies and TV. And she basically walks you through doing all the voices because she's so talented. But she starts with the flapper, talking about kind of the youthful package of it, but also how it is kind of representing rebellion for women, and then moves into...
It's like Betty Boop voice.
Yeah, very much Betty Boop voice. What I really want to talk about, she kind of goes through all of the decades, talking about the different voices for women. But as she kind of gets into the 2000s and beyond, it's so interesting to see because she's doing, like, the Valley Girl voice, the, like, oh, I'm kind of ditzy, I'm kind of dumb. But talking about how it is such a way that, like, we can immediately recognize as women, like, other women using that voice and kind of banding together. And she says it in such a way better way than I am right now. But it's like, oh, you're underestimating me because I'm, like, a blonde girl. Hmm. But I'm actually, like, building my brand and media empire and referencing people like Paris Hilton or
right.
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was such an interesting video of just how everything... down to the voices that we kind of take on societally actually can tie to much bigger concepts. And I think it was definitely worth a watch.
No, I feel like that is such a, like, nuanced discussion within feminism regarding, like, voices and putting on a voice and different reasons to do so. When you said that, the first thing that came to my brain was the Community episode with Allison Brie doing the sexy baby Christmas. And that's so real. That's, like, the most in-your-face spoof I think I've ever seen of, like, the sexy baby thing. But it is kind of really wild to think about if you think about it for a long
period
of
time.
I mean,
she hits a Jennifer Coolidge in here and is like, yeah, she may sound dumb, but she's actually so smart and has been, and it's such a nuanced performance in and of itself with just her. So yeah, I thought that was super interesting, and I've been thinking about voices and
I think that's an interesting commentary to personal branding and how there have been some societal standards put in place of what is professional, what is smart, what is, I mean, even the word professional has a lot of negative connotation. So I think it's really interesting to, you know, dive into that type of dialogue with people and just make sure that you're creating an inclusive space for other identities that might not look the way society has presented as what is correct or
Absolutely.
What is smart.
Oh, I think you're up. I think you're up.
Well, I think it's only appropriate since Natalie's here, a fellow IBT board member, that I talk about Issue Box Theater's upcoming production of She Kills Monsters, which so happens to be my directorial debut. I honestly, my real Roman Empire is the fact that I saw this show when I was 15 years old, and it is the show that made me realize that I'm gay. So that was really cool to see.
Your gay awakening was
literally with She Kills Monsters. I mean, you know, you always suspect a little bit, but then it was that show. I swear, the one, and I hope she's not listening to this because it'll totally reveal me, but the woman who played Lilith when she came out on stage, I was like, oh no, I fear I am not straight. Interesting. and then I really dived into the meaning of the show, and it's such a poignant production that covers grief and loss and love and sexuality and some of these really, really big themes that people all deal with, but it's told through the lens of Dungeons and Dragons. So you kind of shift in and out of a reality storyline, and then you shift through with the main character, Agnes, as she is in her reality dealing with her grief of losing her sister and her parents in a car accident, and then she is playing a D&D module that her sister put together before she died. Wow. And so she's going through this whole journey, she's meeting all of these people, and then there's some really interesting reveals throughout. But I'm very excited about the production. I think there are a lot of different ways to interpret it, and I think one of the reasons, not just my all of my selfish reasons for wanting to do it with Issue Box, but I think one of the reasons I really did want to do it is because people really get excited when I talk about the themes that are in the show. And then the second I tell them it's told through the lens of Dungeons and Dragons, they completely lose it. They lose their happiness. They lose their interest. I watch a cognitive shift when I say Dungeons and Dragons.
Which is interesting, because I'm like, oh, cool, dragons.
Right. Well, and I think it's because people usually associate D&D either with being like a uncool activity, quote unquote, or they associate it with Stranger Things, and which, fair in its own right. But I think one of my big challenges with this show is I want to present this to an audience that normally would not be attracted to see a show about D&D and show them why it's important and why it's cool and why we should not stigmatize it as much as we do.
I mean, you sold me, but also the major selling point is that it's at the planetarium.
Yes, it is. So we, obviously, Issue Box is non-traditional in a lot of ways. So when we do our shows, we look to different spaces every time, and I approached the planetarium at University of Toledo, and obviously with all the D&D fantasy elements, I wanted it to be very immersive, have a lot of cool projections. So it's going to be at the planetarium in September 19th, 20th, 21st, and it's going to be definitely a really cool way, I think, for audiences to either nerd out about something that they love, like I'll be doing and like most of the cast and crew will be doing, or for new audiences to be exposed to something that they might not see otherwise, but then will truly come to appreciate by the end. I'm very excited for it.
I'm excited to watch it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Anyway. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for talking to us about all things art and access. And we cannot wait to see you at the City Pool.
Thanks, Libby. Thanks, Riley.
I want to thank Natalie Gray, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the amazing Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.